Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
Yeah, when I first saw that bikini top on her, she's popping right out of the South Georgia water. Thought, oh good Lord, she had them long tail legs. Couldn't help myself, so I walked up and said, well, baby, you a song.
Good evening. One more time here on the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd and soccer everywhere.
Yes, soccer everywhere, Sean Wally. And of course, we're talking about the World Cup, the U.S. embarking on a big task tomorrow, taking on Belgium. A win would put them into the quarterfinals, something that has eluded them for quite some time, Sean Wally.
Yeah, Sean, it's going to be a great match tomorrow for the United States as they take on Belgium. And we've had exciting games all weekend, exciting matches to be soccer correct, as a couple of games, matches even went to penalty kicks to figure out who is going to win.
Yeah, so, you know, a couple of days ago, it was actually yesterday, was a tough battle for Mexico. Of course, they were an underdog against the Netherlands, but yet and still, there they were in the 87th minute, Sean Wally, 1-0 in the 87th minute. And then all of a sudden, it just seemed like everything rattled for Mexico. And, you know, two goals, actually one of the, you know, the last, I believe was the last play, Sean, that there was a penalty that was called. And my goodness, man, you know, you talk about the NBA and flopping. I've never seen so much flopping as I have seen in you know, World Cup football. I mean, this is just incredible. And, you know, to make a long story short, the you know, the Netherlands wound up getting that goal and beating Mexico 2-1. And man, you talk about, you know, just a somber feeling. And, you know, hats off to the Mexico soccer team, but man, it was a rough one to take that loss.
What is the deal with all the rough play? You've got guys going half loco and biting people on the other squad. You've got a lot of injuries happening, and soccer's a bit more of a rougher sport than you would think.
Yeah, it is. It's a very physical sport. It's a contact sport beyond belief. And the only reason why we haven't heard things like that up until this point, Sean Wally, is because, you know, I mean, it's the World Cup. I mean, these guys are playing for their country. They're putting it all on the line, and sometimes their emotions take its toll. And in this case, I mean, of course, there's no room for any of that kind of play. But, man, you know, biting someone on the shoulder, there's just no place for it. But at the same time, like I mentioned, you know, emotions run high.
Yeah, it's interesting how there's so much drama in soccer with goal scoring or lack thereof, which seems to be the case in a lot of these 1-0, 2-1 games.
Yeah, but, you know, even though they are, you know, 1-0 games and they're very close, you know, they keep you on the edge of your seat, Sean. And you know, that's the thing that, you know, is very exciting about this time of the year, you know, for World Cup soccer. And, you know, when you're looking to root on your country, and of course, you know, I'm talking about the United States, you know, there is a great feeling of camaraderie, you know, when you see, you know, your fellow man walking down the street and they have a USA jersey on, you know, you're like, hey, you know, this is our country we're representing. And you know, it's an exciting time.
So it's going to be quite the match tomorrow for the U.S. as they take on Belgium at 1 p.m. Pacific. It'll be another interesting time for people at work, seeing if anybody throws parties for the match, takes the afternoon off, and we'll see if the U.S. can prevail. And they are getting Jozy Altidore back off his hamstring injury.
Yeah, and Jozy Altidore, who you're mentioning, of course, in your neck of the woods, Seattle Sounder extraordinaire. And so the Sounders are definitely representing. You know, there's no doubt about it. And so, you know, the U.S. is coming off of, you know, a couple of injuries. You know, they, from the sounds of camp, it sounds like everybody's healthy. They should come out and play with a lot of zeal. To answer your question, as far as, you know, people watching tomorrow, I can imagine that there are going to be a lot of people calling in sick and saying, hey, you know, coming down with the U.S. flu, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just amazing how much soccer is taking shape here in the United States. And let's go on out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in big-time guest number one tonight. That is Mike Gastineau of Gasman206.com. Mike, thanks so much for your time tonight.
Wait, you're welcome. Wait, what's the name of the line I'm on? Can you give me that again, please?
That would be the holysmokednuts.com.
All right, good. Good. This is more of an honor than I really thought it was going to be, I got to tell you.
Holy smoke nuts. That's what we got to say.
But let me get this straight. Is this Sean or Sean?
It is both. It is the Double S Express, Sean Boyd and Sean Wally, also known as the Double S Express. And thanks for being on, man.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
So let's get right into it. Of course, I mean, we're just talking about World Cup soccer, and that's something that's a passion of yours. And of course, you've written a book on Seattle Sounders FC. And so there are a couple of players that are playing in the World Cup for the United States. And so tell us a little bit about your zeal and your excitement for the World Cup.
Well, I don't know, passion might be too strong. I know a lot of people who are into it even more than I am. My passion for soccer, I'll back up a little bit. I always liked soccer. I've never understood, well, I understand. I mean, some people just don't like it, whatever. It's not everybody's cup of tea. I've never understood the attacks on the sport. Not everybody's going to like everything. I've always liked it. I mean, going back to when I was in college, I thought it was an interesting, kind of quirky, fun sport. The passion I have was for the Sounders story. You know, how this, you know, I kind of look around and I think to myself, now, wait a minute, they were drawing 2,000 fans a night in the minor leagues, and then they go up to MLS, and overnight they start drawing 32,000 and then 36 and then 40 and then 45 and 50,000. They filled the stadium some nights, and I was curious as to why that happened and how it happened, and that was my motivation to write the book. So I'm into the World Cup. I enjoy watching it and watched all the matches to this point. But the passion I have for the sport is really for the way the Sounders have kind of taken hold of this community and how they, you know, created they created the best franchise in MLS. And, I mean, they made a lot of great moves in doing it, and that's what the book is about.
You're mentioning a great point there, Mike. And, you know, that's interesting how the Sounders move up to the MLS and things evolve into this great atmosphere. And, of course, the Portland Timbers down in Portland as well have a dynamic organization as well in the MLS. Taking it a step further, I'm down in Sacramento, California. We have the Sacramento Republic, which is a new franchise out and are definitely knocking at the door to be in the MLS. And you talk about a zeal and an excitement down here in Northern California. The opening game is at Hughes Stadium. I don't know if you're familiar with the Sacramento area or not, but Hughes Stadium is a home to the Sacramento City College. So it's a community college that has a stadium that seats 22,000. And Sacramento Republic has packed that place every single home game. And so you talk about that excitement in Seattle. I mean, it just seems to be something that has taken the nation by storm, and definitely in Seattle and, of course, in Sacramento.
Seems to be big on the West Coast. There are other pockets where it's big. I think soccer fans in general, there is a passion and a zeal for the sport. And I think part of it comes is because for the first time really in America, there is a league in MLS that's our league that you can watch. And it's not as good maybe as the European leagues. It's not as far behind the European leagues as people think. It's very entertaining soccer. And then that has led to the more minor league teams and more passion in places like Sacramento, where they're like, hey, if we do a good job here and if the fans come out and they support and the team has good ownership, maybe there'll be a path for us to get into MLS. It's been interesting for me to watch because the growth of the sport, and I think people attach too much importance to, okay, now here's the World Cup. Now, is there going to be an impact on MLS? There is, because it's going to be part of the continued growth. But, I mean, this thing is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And you know, you think to where soccer was 20 years ago when the World Cup was here in 1994, there was no major professional sports soccer league in America. Well, now 20 years later, there is one, and it's been around for 18 years. It's got TV deals. It's got nice stadiums. It's got some areas where it needs to improve. But the continued growth of the sport to me has just been fascinating because it has come kind of against the tide of some of the naysayers, you know, the people who not only don't like it but feel a need to attack it as something that's un-American or something, you know, some nonsensical thing like that. I find the fans to be, I don't know, you know, one of the things I like about going to matches, I love going to a soccer match because nobody tells me when I should applaud. There's nothing on the scoreboard telling me I have to cheer or make noise, or there's no creation of atmosphere that is anything but natural and organic, and I really love that. I've gotten tired of going to sports events and just having my senses assaulted by, okay, everybody stand up and applaud now. Okay, everybody now, it's like being in church, you know, you're just being told what to do for an hour. And I kind of like the idea that you know, at soccer, people are up and applauding because something good has happened, not because they're being told by a scoreboard to clap their hands.
Mike Gastineau joining us here on The Double with the Double S Express. And Mike, when the MLS started here in the United States, it took a while to take hold and be the thing that everybody wanted to watch and go to the matches. And now it seems to be on that upward tick. What do you think the difference was early on with the league to what they have offer today?
They had to get established. They needed the establishment of some stars. David Beckham, you know, his role can't be understated in this. I mean, he came over here and he made casual people pay attention because he was such a big star, even though he was near the end of his career. Other stars now have come over, you know, Michael Bradley and certainly Clint Dempsey here, and there's the development of young stars, you know, a guy like DeAndre Yedlin, and I mean, we're just kind of staying in the hometown here, but, you know, DeAndre Yedlin's a homegrown guy in Seattle. Now all of a sudden he's playing on the U.S. men's national team, and then he'll come back and play in the MLS for the next half of the season. You know, people talk about the growth of the MLS, and they want to try and quantify or qualify where it is. I've always felt the best league to compare it to is the NBA, and not the NBA of today. Compare it to the NBA when the NBA was 18 years old, which was 1966. Go back and look at the NBA in 1966. Most games were played not in front of sellout crowds. The NBA used to do double headers. They used to actually have four NBA teams come into New York or Philadelphia, and to get the fans to come out, they'd each play a game. I mean, they'd play two league games in one night because that was the only way they could fill a stadium. I think it's the 1967 NBA Finals went seven games. Three of them were on TV. Four of them were not on TV. It was a different day and age because there wasn't as many TV channels and there wasn't as much media and all that. But nonetheless, compare the MLS now at age 18 to the NBA at age 18. It's pretty favorable, really. And you think at that point the NBA was still, you know, the NBA was still 15 years away at that point from Bird and Magic, which everybody kind of agrees is what, you know, was the fuel that really kicked the league into the next level. You know, the great old 79 Sonics, and they win the world championship, and those games were on tape delay across the country. They didn't have live television for their championship series in 1979. Bird and Magic changed all that, and then Jordan took it to another level, and now LeBron. It'll be interesting to see where the MLS is in another 10 or 15 years, and they may still be 10 or 15 years away from that huge explosive growth spurt, but I think that's the fairest comparison. Compare them to a league that's their age at that time, and they come off looking pretty good.
Mike, explain, if you will, to our listeners what the march to the match is. I've never experienced it, and I hear it's amazing. It's something you have to be able to experience at least once, and it's really great to start the event and just a great march to the match, as they call it there in Seattle.
Yeah, it was borrowed from both South America and Europe. Club teams there do it. It was something that goes back to when the Sounders were in the USL, and they were drawing very small crowds, but they had a group of, and this is like about 20 or 30 boosters that would meet in the bar, or in a bar in Pioneer Square before the match, and they'd have a couple of drinks and then go in. And one night they said, why don't we all go in together? And why don't we have these songs we like to sing? Let's sing them. And so, you know, you can imagine now, because now it's, you know, the smallest March of the Match crowds are you know, several hundred. For the big games, for Portland, they'll have three or four, well, I don't know if it'll be 3,000 or 4,000, but it'll be over 1,000. It might be a couple of thousand people. You know, this grew from something of 30 people. And when the Sounders got to MLS, they met with the Emerald City supporters, and they all agreed this would be a good thing for the Sounders to embrace, and it's just the pub's empty out at about an hour to an hour and a half before the game, and they've got a stage there at Occidental Park, and they introduce the starting lineup. The players aren't there, obviously, but they announce who the starting lineup is. They usually have a band there, and then the Sounders band is there, and then somebody lights a smoke bomb, and off everybody marches to the stadium. It really is an impressive thing to see.
Mike Gastineau, kind enough to join us here on the Double with the Double S Express, and Mike, you've led a pretty solid radio career, of course, in the Seattle area, and you know, spending a lot of time with KJR, and I believe what for goodness 20, 21 years somewhere around there.
Something like that, ungodly amount of years.
And so, I mean, I know from my time up in Seattle, you were a strong pillar, especially for KJR. Now, what made you just, you know, in 2012, just stepping away and wanting to do your thing? And, you know, was it just time or I mean, because it sounds like it was a great thing that was going. I know I enjoyed you tremendously on 950 KJR.
Well, thanks, Sean. You're nice to say that. It was just time. I had, you know, I came home from my show one night in September of 2012, and I said to my wife, you know what, I think I want to leave. And we had had some talks about this, and I had kind of been toying with it. I felt myself losing a little of my zeal and a little of my passion. You know, my give-a-damn factor kept going down and down. I was like, I don't care, I don't care. And when you start saying you don't care about something, that's a real sign that, you know, you got to think about what you're doing here. And I just think there's so much to do a radio show, and to do it the right way, you've got to bring a lot of passion and a lot of energy, and you've got to be fired up every day. And I noticed there were days when I just didn't care. And I thought, you know, I'm not going to let those stack up. I don't want those days to turn into weeks and months and have people say, boy, he really has lost it. And so I, you know, I kind of made the decision, and I waited about a month and a half to tell anybody outside of my wife, because I wanted to make sure that's how I felt. And every night I kept coming home and thinking the same thing. I used to joke on the air that I had a little voice in the back of my head that used to say, shut up, they've heard that story before. And that voice kept getting louder and louder and louder. So in, I guess, mid to late November, I went to my boss at KJR, and I had a little bit of time left on my contract, and I said, look, I don't want to even talk about re-upping, and I want to leave with everybody in a good mood. You know, it's pretty rare to pull off in radio. Normally, one party or the other is really pissed off or angry or threatening litigation. And I wanted to leave, you know, with my head held high, and I wanted them to feel that way, too. And, you know, they did a nice thing. They said, hey, you know, you're welcome here anytime. And they've lived up to that. I walk in that building anytime I want. I act like I still work there. Half the people don't even know who I am anymore because the business changes so fast. But it's fun. I mean, I go in there. I do a lot of recording in there. You know, we're going to have Arlo White on my show tomorrow night, and I'll go in tomorrow afternoon to KJR and record that. So they've been terrific to me, and it ended up being a real good thing. And I think I made the right decision. And I don't know, I may get back into radio at some point. More, I mean, I'm doing an hour show now once a week. But I may get into it on a bigger basis. But I just felt that at the time, stepping away was the right move for me. I'd been in a radio station every day of my life for 37 years. And it just felt like it was time to maybe step away and then do something else.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, you talk about the change in radio, and of course, you know, the show that you had at the time, Groz and Groz with Gas, I mean, that was such an awesome show. And at the time of day, I believe, did you have the 3 o'clock slot, or was it the 12 noon slot?
Yeah, Groz and I basically did 1 to 7. Groz did 1 to 3
1 to
by
7.
Himself. We did 3 to 5 together, and then I did 5 to 7 by myself. So one or the other of us was on the air for 6 hours every day.
Yeah.
And it was great. I mean, my partnership with Dave was without question the high point of my career, and that's another one. You know, a lot of times when those partnerships end, it's rocky or it's not the same. Dave and I have maintained a great friendship, and we don't see each other as much as we used to, but heaven knows, we saw each other every day for, you know, 3 to 4 hours a day. We don't need to see each other. But we pick right up when we see each other, and we have lots of laughs, and we meet for drinks a couple times. You know, maybe once every couple of months, and it's a ball. I really, really loved working with Dave.
Well, interestingly enough, guest number two on our show is Bob Stelton, who is the also so that you have that common variable with Groz. And so Bob will be coming on for the second half of the show. But, yeah, kind of, you know, tell our listeners here. I mean, you've done some great things, you know, on Sirius Radio with Pearl Jam, and you know, doing those things with XM Radio as well. So, I mean, what are some different things that you're doing outside of sports?
Well, I don't know if I'm doing anything outside of sports. That's a great point. I kind of said I wanted to get away from it, and then I stayed in it. I did a ton of work for Pearl Jam Radio last summer. I kind of jokingly tell them it was the best summer job I ever had. They had a new album coming out, and they had a show they were doing at Wrigley Field, and we kind of talked about some things that we could do together, and we came up with the idea of me interviewing baseball players who were into Pearl Jam. And there was a ton of those, and every time a team would come into Seattle, we'd go talk to a guy and bring him out to the Pearl Jam studio or their warehouse where they have a studio, and it was fun. It was really a blast. We for the time being, we're not doing anything, but we keep discussing projects, so something might come up where it works for both of us. But my main thing, and you know, it was after I decided to leave KJR that it hit me that I had this book in me that I'm like, I want to try and write a book about this Sounders story because it really is a great story, and it's not necessarily a good story for radio. It takes too long to tell. You need a different way of doing it. So the main thing I've done in the last, you know, year and a half since I left is write the book and then market the book because I self-published it, so everything's kind of been done on my own, and it's been great. It's been a really cool experience. It's the hardest I've ever worked to make money in my life, but it's been a lot of fun.
Now, Mike, one of the favorite stories I've heard you tell is when you were doing Sonics postgame back in the day and the Charles Barkley story. And if you could tell that, and then also if you have any other favorite moments of your sports radio days.
Well, the Barkley story is a classic. So we're in Houston. You know, and I'd been covering the Sonics enough, but I think Barkley, he didn't know who I was necessarily, but he knew I was somebody. He was like, all right, this guy's with the Sonics radio, and I kind of know who he is. So I think it's 97 maybe. It's a year when Houston beats the Sonics. Might have been 98. Doesn't matter. So they beat them in the series, and the season is over, and I got to do Sonics talk post-game. And we're getting ready to start. We go on about a half hour after the game ends, and the building's empty. There's still some media people around, but there's no fans around. And Barkley comes out, and he's just kind of milling around. So I walk over, and I introduce myself. I said, hey, we're doing Sonics postgame. Could you come on? And he says, I've got to do a couple of TV interviews, and if you're still on the air when I'm done, I'll come on with you. So I said, okay, great. So we get started. It's a Saturday afternoon. The Sonics have lost. There are no phone calls. I mean, nobody wants to talk about the Sonics. The season is over. So I'm tap dancing like a maniac, just killing time and reading stats and BSing my way through just anecdote after anecdote. And I'm watching Barkley, and typical of TV people, you know, they take forever to do their interviews. I mean, God almighty, you build a coliseum in the time it takes a TV guy to conduct an interview. So I watch him, and he finishes his first one. And he does his second one. I'm like, God, this is taking forever. So I'm kind of near the point where I'm just going to give up and sign off. And all of a sudden, I notice that he's wrapping up. So I'm kind of like sitting up and trying to be obvious, and I'm talking. And he looks around, and he sees me. And he points at me and kind of moves his hand like a talking motion, like, are you still on the air? And I gave him a thumbs up. And he gets up and turns and runs off the floor into the locker room. Like, you got to be kidding me here. You have got to be kidding me. So I'm like, well, and about a minute later, here he comes. He's running back the other direction towards me, and he's got a six-pack of Coors Light Tall Boys. And they're dripping, he's dripping water as he's coming across the floor. And he sets them down, and he opens one for me and opens one for him. And he says, okay, now I'm done with TV. We can have some beers. And we sat and talked for probably 15 minutes. He was always just the greatest. I mean, he was, you know, just sensational. And he came on, and we talked about the series. He talked about how much he liked George Carl and how much he liked the Sonics. And it was really, really a fun memory for me to have him on that day.
Man, that seems like typical Charles Barkley. It does. It seems typical of Charles to actually do something like that. And, of course, you know, coming out with a six-pack, man, that is just wild.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, it's the second time that he set me up with drinks when he was in Phoenix one night. Phoenix beats the Sonics, and we get done with our post game, and we walk over to Dan Marley's bar, which is right across the street from the arena there, and we walk in. The place is jumping. You know, people are excited, and it's a playoff win. And we end up sitting at a table with a bunch of people who work with the Suns, and they don't really know us other than to say hello. But they say, oh, you're welcome to sit here. So we kind of park in the corner. Well, about 5 minutes after we get there, here comes Barkley. And he walks in, and he's in the fan. And Barkley's walking into a bar after the game, right? And he sees all the Suns employees, and he walks over and kind of high-fives them. And these are, you know, ticket people and promotions people. They're not bigwigs, but Charles knows them all and is high-fiving them. And he immediately says, get this table around to drinks. And we're sitting there, and I kind of feel like, all right, I feel like I should say something here. So I say, hey, Charles. And he looks over, I go, we're with the Sonics, man. You don't have to buy us drinks. And he looks back at the bar, and he goes, they're with the Sonics. Make theirs a double because they need it.
Oh, man. So he's adding insult to injury there. Of course, their team, you know, at that time doing very well. But, man, that's an awesome Charles Barkley story. Awesome moment for you, actually. So.
You know, one of my other favorite stories, that same night, this is how good it must have been to be Thunder Dan Marley. Here he has his own bar right next to the arena. And I remember, it's Phoenix in June, so it's like, you know, wow. 90 degrees. It was the 93 finals or conference finals. So it's like 90 degrees at midnight. All of a sudden, here comes Marley. He leaves the bar and gets in a car with like three just gorgeous women. And they take off, and like 10 minutes later, they come back, same car, Marley, with three different women. And I never found out, you know, what happened, but it's like, well, boy, it is good to be Thunder Dan tonight.
Oh, man, yeah, well, you know, Dan's doing some awesome stuff still down there in the Phoenix area. I believe he's the head coach of Grand Canyon University down there,
right,
which
is now
a Division I. They just moved to Division I, I believe, this past season. So, yeah, he's still making his mark down there in the Phoenix area.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And he, boy, what a shooter that guy was. He single-handedly took the Sonics out of a couple of games. Yeah, Grand Canyon's in the WAC. They're in the same league as Seattle U. So
they
come through here once a year. I'm not sure if Marley's still got a convertible full of babes with him, but they do come through Seattle.
Mike Gastineau, we could keep you for hours with all your stories and so many subjects we didn't get to tonight, but we'd love to have you back on. Thank you so much for your time. Visit gasman206.com, where you can stay up on everything Mike Gastineau and purchase Seattle Sounders FC Authentic Masterpiece and follow Mike on Twitter at gasman206. We appreciate your time tonight, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks. Tell Rockstar Bob hi for me and ask him about singing on my old open, because he used to sing on the opening for my show. So. Bob is probably the most multi-talented guy in Seattle radio. There's a lot of things he could do if he ended up, ends up getting sick of Graz, which I'm not saying I think will happen. I'm just saying it might. And if he does and he walks out one day, there'll be a lot of other things he can do.
Awesome.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much, Mike. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks, man.
Mike Gastineau, Seattle Sports Radio superstar, legend, definitely so much insight, so much great stories, so many different avenues we could have gone and covered, but right now it's all about World Cup and soccer.
Yeah, it's a World Cup, you know, with the U.S. tomorrow going up against Belgium. That's a big game. And, of course, as you mentioned before, Sean Wally, 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time start. United States, get excited and get pumped up for the U.S. in this soccer. So we'll take a quick break, and when we return, we will have guest number two, Bob Stelton of Cairo 710. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that went away. And I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400,
the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to Andro400.com. Andro400.com.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. And the world's gonna know your name. Cause you're better with the
brother. Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. As we march on here after first guest Mike Gastineau, Gasman 206, and big time guest number two, Bob Stelton of 710 ESPN, will be along in just a couple minutes.
Man, yeah, what a great start to this show, Sean Wally, and of course having Mike Gastineau on. And I, as I mentioned before, man, just a strong pillar in the Pacific Northwest and on the airwaves, and, you know, just doing a tremendous job and taking a break and, you know, writing a book. And, you know, the awesome part about that is, Sean, is that, you know, Mike is getting to do what he wants to do. And, you know, sometimes, you know, we get boggled down into our everyday lives and not, you know, getting a chance to take that breather. And so it's good to know that Mike's, you know, taking on this new journey, and who knows, he might be back in radio. And, you know, of course, he has an hour show that he's doing, but man, it was good having him on ours.
You know, if we're in radio as long as Gasman's been in radio, we will be old men, but we will be very, very happy old men.
Yeah, and all the changes that Mike has seen, you know, going from AM to FM and from 950 to 95.7 back to 950, and, you know, kind of moving around and doing some great things, you know, with the Sonics and now with the Sounders. I mean, man, that's living the dream.
And how about the time he got with Charles Barkley and having the beers and just that one-on-one time? It's got to be awesome to have that opportunity. And let's go on out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in big time guest number two, Bob Stelton of 710 ESPN Seattle, Bob and Graz. Bob Stelton, thanks for joining us tonight.
What's happening, boys?
Hey, Bob, I think the first order of business, this comes from Mike Gastineau. Man, you have to sing for us, because you're a jack of all trades, and he told us that you're a phenomenal singer.
At one point in my life, I was, you know, the dream was to be a rock star, and somehow I failed down to talk show host. So here I am.
So the start of singing in the open of the Graz and Gas show, I'm sure. And so here you are now working with Graz. I mean, that's the common denominator that I was talking with Mike about. And, you know, it's got to be a lot of fun. It's got to be a lot of fun up there in the Pacific Northwest. Some great things happening. Seattle Seahawks winning the Super Bowl, and now the Mariners are doing some awesome things. So, you know, one of the discussions that you guys have had over the past couple of days is this trade deadline coming up for the Seattle Mariners and some of the trades of past that have gone bad, if you will.
Well, yeah, people love to dwell on what hasn't worked for this team, and unfortunately there's a long, you know, checkered history of things that haven't gone well, but, you know, this team at this point is probably overachieving. It's achieving more than I think anybody truly anticipated at this point. And the idea of looking at past trades that haven't worked or moves that haven't worked, that's all nonsense. You can't operate under fear. I mean, it's, you know, if we're going to sit there and operate under the idea that, well, it didn't work before, so let's not try it again, most of us would never have a second date or go out with a girl again. So, it's, you know, they can't function under fear, and I don't suspect that they will. It doesn't mean they're going to make a blockbuster move by any stretch, because I'm not entirely sure as far as offense, who's actually going to be available, because so many teams feel like they're in the race. So a lot of teams aren't going to be willing to give up, you know, somebody who might be a big part of their offense. So we'll see what they do. But I don't sense that they're going to operate under anything other than let's get that piece or two that's going to put us over the top.
Yeah, well, you have to applaud the great job that manager Lloyd McClendon is doing. And, of course, as we speak, the Seattle Mariners are definitely putting the throttle down. Last I checked, I believe they're up 8-3 against the Houston Astros. And so they are moving right along, 7.5 games out of first place in the Oakland A's, who are in a dogfight. But more importantly, they're at that number two wild card spot.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, that second wild card spot has made it interesting for a lot of teams. And like I said, there's so many teams within six games, seven games, who feel like, hey, we're in this. So as far as the trade deadline goes at the end of July, it'll be interesting to see who looks at it and says, all right, realistically, do we have a shot? Yeah, we might be six or seven games out, but there might be eight teams in front of us. So you need a lot of bad to happen for them and a lot of good to happen for your team. So the Mariners are in the thick of it. I mean, they've got the best bullpen in the American League. They've got the second-best rotation in the American League. And the fact that they're sitting six games over 500 before tonight's game with a highly suspect offense to this point of the season is a minor miracle, and Lloyd McClendon deserves a lot of credit for pushing the right button.
So, Bob, what do you think they need then? I mean, you know, as the deadline looms, I mean, what is a key position that Seattle might need to make their team a little bit better moving forward here?
They need a right-handed bat. They need a right-handed bat and a right-handed bat and a right-handed bat. I mean, that's what they need is some power from the right-hand side of the plate. They're very left-handed heavy. They need, you know, ultimately the position is going to be in the outfield if they can do, you know, I don't know that they'll be choosy. DH, outfield, if they have to be a first baseman, whatever. If it's a right-handed power bat, they're going to find a spot for it. And, again, you know, trying to find out or figure out, I should say, who's available at this point is kind of tough because if anybody looks at the expanded standings of teams that are, you know, like I said, within six games of that second wild card spot, there's a lot of teams. So nobody's going to be parting with, you know, anybody they feel like is going to help them get over the hump. So it's going to be, I suspect it's going to be down to the wire, the trade deadline at the end of July before you see a real big move.
Bob Stelton joining us. And Bob, do you give any credence to this supposed leak that Dustin Ackley was offered to the Astros for catcher Jason Castro back in November?
Yeah, I think it's from what I've read and seen people commenting on, people that I trust within the business, it seems to be completely valid as far as the document that's out there. Obviously, it was not supposed to have made its way out in the public for public consumption, but the idea that the Mariners would want to trade Ackley is not a big surprise. The reality is that he's not lived up to the hype. He's not been what anybody thought he was going to be at this point. Doesn't mean he won't, but to this point, he just, you know, outside of his first season, which was not a full season, he just hasn't shown it. He's had flashes. He's had moments. Now, he has had a position change, you know, going from second base to the outfield, but he's just not getting it done out at the plate on a consistent level. So the idea that they would trade him is not shocking in the least. You know, some people were shocked that they were looking at a catcher, but if you read that thing, it looked like that the intention was to get the catcher and then move him for other teams that were calling the Mariners to try to get him from the Astros.
Now, Bob, we haven't had you back on the show since you got to experience Super Bowl 48. What was that like for you, and what did you take away from that experience?
You know, that was, I think that was Super Bowl number 7 that I've been to. And that by far was the most interesting because I'm a Seahawks fan. And I, you know, for everybody who says you need to be objective when you're in the media, you can't be a fan. Well, yeah, you need to be objective, but I am a fan. That's why you get in the business. I'm a Seahawks fan. So it was really unique on that level. And it was sort of surreal because you're going up against, you know, a record-setting offense. I mean, the Broncos were putting up numbers that hadn't been seen ever. They were setting records, and it just seemed like the perfect match. The top offense in all of the NFL against the top defense in all of the NFL, and defense won in such a massive, dominant way that it was almost surreal. It just felt weird. It felt like a home game almost. It was the loudest Super Bowl I've ever been to.
and the Seahawks and their fan base pulled extremely well for that game. And having it in New York City, as much as everybody got sideways over the fact that it's in a cold weather city, and it certainly was freezing. It was cold the week leading up to it. It warmed up for the game, but I thought it was a perfect host city. It's tough to beat New York. I love that city. There's a million things to do, a million places to go, and I thought it was fantastic. So, I mean, you know, the city itself, it worked out weather-wise. The snow didn't dump until the day after the game. Everything was absolutely perfect as far as I could see it, and topped off by a dominant Seahawks win.
Bob Stelton joining us here on the double. And Bob, so what's your take of off-season moves for the Seattle Seahawks? Have they done everything to put themselves in position to repeat and go back and win a possible second Super Bowl in a row?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it, right, when you look at them, but it's hard to do. I mean, you look at the last team to do it is the Patriots. Everything looks great on paper, and then you go into the season and things happen, whether it's injuries or somebody doesn't play as well as you expected. But as you look at them now, you know, they didn't make any huge offseason moves in the way of free agents or new faces, but they locked up Richard Sherman. They locked up Earl Thomas. They locked up Doug Baldwin. You know, so they made Michael Bennett the offer he wanted. He's back. So you brought back a lot of what you had, what got you to the Super Bowl. And you expect the young guys to take that next step up, and the guys that you drafted last year, some of them injured, some of them just didn't play, to have a much bigger impact this year. You lost Brett Bryant, you lost Chris Clements, Clinton McDonald, Brandon Browner. So you lost pieces that helped you get there, but ultimately I think they're as good as they were last year, and we'll see how some of the young guys perform. Tristan Michael is the guy they expect to see a lot more of at the running back position. We'll see what some of these draft picks coming up are going to be like, some of the guys that were injured, and Greg Scruggs and Jordan Hill on the defensive side of things last year. So they've got a ton of potential in guys that didn't see a lot of time last year that you feel pretty good about based on, you know, the way they've been able to scout talent and find diamonds in the rough like no other team I've ever seen. And I'm just curious to see if they're going to be able to do it again with some of the draft picks from this year and last year, like I said, that didn't get a lot of time on the field.
Now, Bob, one of the things that we haven't talked about is the strength of the NFC West. And, of course, you know, San Francisco 49ers are that added foe, that rival, if you will, in the NFC West that has also made some moves in the offseason that has bettered their ball club. And, of course, you're talking about the St. Louis Rams and the Arizona Cardinals as well. Do you see any of those teams actually positioning themselves to catapult above Seattle, or is Seattle just that good?
Well, you know, it's every team in this division is going to be better, you would think. And again, that's injuries aside. Anybody who suffers a major injury, it's going to have a huge impact on the results. But as you sit right now, you can't help feel like every single team got better, and that includes the 49ers. And the Niners were a pass away last year. Remember in the NFC title game, Richard Sherman, you know, tips away that pass, and it's intercepted in the end zone. And it was that close. I mean, it wasn't as if the Seahawks went out there and blew out the 49ers in that game. So these teams are very, very good. And there's not, as much as I love Seattle and detest the 49ers, I can't sit here and tell you the Seahawks are light years ahead of the 49ers. 49ers are a fantastic team. And I expect them to be right in the middle of it. I'll be interested to see how they do without Navarro Bowman, with that, you know, obviously a terrible knee injury suffered against the Seahawks. We'll see what happens with Alden Smith to start the season, if there's going to be a suspension. You know, Justin Smith's the guy who's getting a little bit older. So there's a few question marks, but overall, that's a fantastic team. And I expect everybody, and the Rams have a knack of making everybody look bad when they play them. And they've gotten that much better. They had a fantastic draft. We'll see how healthy Sam Bradford is coming back from his injury. But the Cardinals improved themselves as well. So it's going to be a fun year in the NFC West, without question.
Now, Bob, switching to one of your other sports passions, UFC. Some very big news came down over the weekend about some banned substances. What's going on there?
Well, our buddy, my buddy Chael Sonnen has been officially released by Fox Sports. He's no longer affiliated with the UFC. They just released a statement a few hours ago. He had a dirty test the first time. And then a second test, a follow-up test, showed that he was on HGH and EPO, which was brought into, you know, public consciousness with Lance Armstrong. So He had a bevy of things floating through his system, and it's really, really a bummer to see it go this way for him. He retired after the first 30 tests, blamed it on TRT, which was a legal process that he was on until the UFC banned it. And then in his, apparently, and I'm not a doctor, but from what everybody I talk to and hear from on this, TRT is not something you just stop. You have to kind of work your way off of it. And sometimes that requires different substances that he was using that caused the dirty test the first time. How HGH and EPO have anything to do with that, I'm not sure. It makes him look terrible. And, you know, obviously a devastating blow to his post-fighting career because he was a fantastic commentator, incredibly popular. Fox Sports loved him, but they have disassociated themselves from him. So he is out of a job as we sit and speak right now.
In your speaking with Dana White, is he completely against performance-enhancing drugs on the record, and he doesn't want that in his sport at all?
Oh, without question. I've talked to Dana a number of times, and everything. The beauty of Dana is whatever he says off the record, he says on the record. He's a man without a filter. So whether you love him or hate him, you know you're getting the unvarnished truth most of the time. So he's been very upfront with how he feels about it. He hated TRT. I think he was happy when the Nevada State Athletic Commission and the UFC got together and officially said this is no longer going to be allowed. Unfortunately, there are some side effects to a ruling like that. It is, again, from the experts, of which I'm not one on that, it's not something you just stop. You just say, okay, I'm done using it. Apparently, there is some sort of transition that takes place in terms of what you do. So Dana White has been pretty consistent in his message about performance-enhancing drugs. And I know he loves Chael as an individual. I would expect, and I haven't heard from Dana yet on this, but I would expect his response would be, listen, you made your bed, man. This is, you gotta lie in it now.
Bob Stelton, it is a big day on Monday for you and the 710 ESPN family. Do you have any top secret info you can hint to us of what may be happening 7/14/14?
I was hoping you guys would have it. It's the best kept secret in the world, and all I know is if it has anything to do with me, they better tell me soon because I'm going to be upset. I don't really know. As much as listeners are hitting me on Twitter and texting in and, you know, kind of speculating what it means, we're kind of all doing the same thing in the building. So I'm hoping I'll know before you guys, but the way this is going, I'm almost feeling like we're all going to learn on the same day.
So as far as you know right now, 12-3 still your time slot and Graz still your co-host?
As far as I know. Now, Graz was sick today, which is, you know, a big rarity. Not really, but, as far as I know, he wasn't in secret meetings, you know, plotting something. As far as I know, I am 12-3, as I have been for the last 3.5 years with Graz, and if anything changes, I better find out before other people do. That's all I can say.
All right, 7/14/14, a big day for Bob, his co-pilot Graz there. Bob and Graz, 12-3, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. Bob Stelton, thanks so much for your time and insight tonight.
You got it. Anytime, guys.
Thanks, Bob.
You got it.
There goes Bob Stelton giving his insight on the Mariners, his trip to the Super Bowl. Amazing. 7 Super Bowls he's worked now.
Man, that, you know, that is fun. And of course, you know, he brings the humanistic side as far as, you know, being a reporter and being someone who brings sports to the public. You know, when your favorite team is playing, let's face it, you're going to be a fan, you know, but you're going to also be, you know, diplomatic about it and give it in a way that is suitable for everybody to listen to. But man, it's got to be fun to do 7 Super Bowls and, of course, have your and then do a Super Bowl with your favorite team.
And to be paid for it, too. That's a very good reason to be in this sports radio industry, sports broadcasting. And Stelton's been able to live that 7 times at Super Bowls. Just amazing. Awesome. Let's go ahead and send it over to Sean Boyd for an On the Double sports update.
Man, some great things happening in Major League Baseball. The Seattle Mariners, of course, up 8-3. Holding on to that second wild card spot as we were speaking, of course, moving one game closer to the Oakland A's falling 5-4 to Detroit. Some other news in the NBA, LeBron James wants a max salary. Of course, there's going to be some talks with he and Pat Riley coming up in the near future. And the USA, of course, getting ready to take on Belgium in World Cup soccer tomorrow. That first kick will be at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So that is your update on the double.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services. Platinum service without the platinum price.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret. A new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product. Helped me a lot. Took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe, with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy. Standing in the Hall of Fame.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. Another good show just about in the books. Big time thank you to our big time guest tonight, Seattle Sports Radio legends Mike Gastineau of Gasman206.com and Bob Stelton of 710 ESPN Seattle.
Yeah, giving our listeners a flavor of the Pacific Northwest, and you know, good to hear these guys, you know, Bob Stelton and Mike Gastineau, awesome people. You know, doing awesome sports talk in the Pacific Northwest, and you know, some great things are happening up there, Sean Wally. So we have to give credence to all our people that you know, those things are happening.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what they do at 710 ESPN Seattle on Monday. Changes are coming to their on-air lineup. Everybody is believing that program director and former co-host of Brock and Salk, Mike Salk, is returning to the airwaves. That is the big rumor, and other changes possibly. So Monday will be an interesting day in Seattle sports radio.
Kind of felt like, you know, the elephant in the room. We were talking to Bobby. He was like, man, your guess is as good as ours. And, you know, Salk, of course, you know, being, you know, in Seattle before heading to Boston. And, you know, now Salk is coming back, and, you know, I'm sure these guys will find a way to cohabitate and coincide, and you know, bring the best, you know, bring some good sports talk.
Interesting note with the Mariners just about assured of a win in Houston. That'll be their 18th win in June, which is tied for tops in the majors. The Oakland A's one game back at 17 victories. A very good month for both the Mariners and the Athletics.
Yeah, you know, the Athletics keep moving right along, and the Mariners are doing a great job. Of course, this win will put them 6.5 out of the lead spot of the Oakland A's. And, of course, you know, Oakland keeps getting these nicks and dings. And, of course, Josh Donaldson going out yesterday, and now today, you know, we had Scott Kazmir going out, leaving in the sixth inning. I don't know what that injury was about. But they find ways of winning And, you know, Seattle just has to hang in there. And, of course, what Bob Stelton was talking about, you know, if there was a move to be made by the Seattle Mariners, it would be a right-handed bat. Doesn't seem like they need a bat today, Sean. I mean, 8-3, they're definitely doing an awesome job.
Yeah, both the A's and the Mariners have scored over 120 runs. So everybody says offense is a problem in Seattle. Well, at times it is. It's kind of like a roller coaster, ebbs and flows. You know, they scored 20 runs in 2 days last week. Now they have another 8 spot here tonight. And Oakland's been scoring runs aplenty down there at O.co and the rest of the American League. And we'll see. We'll see if Jack Zarencic decides to trade some prospects and bring in a bat.
You know, I you have to be careful, and that's one of the things that Bob was talking about, of course, in there with Bob and Graz earlier today. Earlier yesterday, as far as don't make a move just to make a move. You know, if you're going to make that decision, be strong with that decision moving forward. You know, Seattle has to be aware of that. They have to be aware of just saying, hey, if we feel like things are going well now, let's just keep it going. And hopefully, you know, we can rely on our farm system and pull a couple of guys up here or there. But, you know, I mean, right now Seattle's doing good and they just have to weather this storm. And then after that, start to make that move. And Seattle does have some great pitching to do that.
Sean, late last week, the NBA held its draft, and what a story Isaiah Austin is. The Baylor forward was ready to be drafted. All the experts thought late first round, he was going to realize his dream, become a millionaire, play in the NBA. Then all of a sudden, a blood test reveals he has Marfan syndrome, which means he has enlarged heart arteries, and overwork could lead his heart to rupture. So he had to shut it down and will not play in the NBA.
Yeah, that is definitely a heartfelt story. And Isaiah Austin, if you haven't followed him, I mean, you know, he had no idea that he had this problem with the enlarged heart because, I mean, he was so busy, concentrated on, he was blind in one eye, Sean Wally. I mean, this is something that this guy is an overcomer, you know, day in and day out. And here he's realizing his dream, you know, 4 days before the draft, and he hears this just terrible news. And so, you know, just prayers go out to him. And, you know, I know he's going to bounce back and get back on his feet, but you never like hearing those types of things. But you have to like the gesture of Adam Silver and, you know, what he's done in his first tenure as the commissioner of the NBA. And, you know, Isaiah Austin, you know, we're definitely pulling for you, and hopefully somewhere down the line you can, you know, get yourself healthy. But in the meantime, it's a sad story to such a great young man.
And locally for the former Washington Husky sharpshooter C.J. Wilcox, I find it very interesting being drafted by Steve Ballmer's Los Angeles Clippers. I wonder if owner Ballmer had anything to do with that draft pick, seeing as how he's watched Wilcox play for 4 years at Washington.
Yeah, I'm sure that had something to do with it. And, of course, the University of Washington representing with having Wilcox being picked. And so, you know, that's also great. And, you know, here in Northern California, got to say hats off to Xavier Thames for getting picked by the Toronto Raptors. I believe Xavier Thames was picked, Pleasant Grove High School alum, and so in playing at San Diego State, where a lot of Northern California players right now are playing at San Diego State. So hats off to Xavier Thames for getting drafted as well.
And Sean, a coach is changing teams almost like a trade of players. Jason Kidd leaving Brooklyn for Milwaukee?
Yeah, so I guess the big deal is that, you know, whenever you're a head coach, you have to make sure that you're in line with ownership. And it just seems like from the jump, Jason Kidd and ownership for the Brooklyn Nets weren't on that same page. And, of course, we've had that, you know, that experience down here in Northern California with Mark Jackson exiting as the head coach of the Golden State Warriors. And, you know, it baffles me because, you know, this is a franchise that, you know, got to the playoffs because of Jason Kidd. And, you know, the season started out a little shaky, but they did make it to the postseason. And it looked like the team was on the rise. All they need to do is, you know, put a couple of pieces in place. And so, you know, it just kind of makes you wonder where the loyalties lie, if there ever was one. Or I take that back. There was once upon a time, but it just seems like in this day and age, Sean Wally, that loyalty means nothing, and you can be replaced at the drop of a hat.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And, you know, for Jason Kidd and his assistant coaches that he's taking with him, Kidd's getting a very nice raise, a very healthy raise to go coach the Bucks and deal with the winters in Milwaukee.
No doubt about it. And I think, you know, Jason will do a great job. I still think that he is the players' coach, and, you know, the players will rally around him because, you know, he is just removed from being on the court. And it does. It means a lot to be a point guard. And then when you retire, going into being a coach. And so it's shown over the past few years as far as head coaching is concerned. And, yeah, I just think that Jason Kidd will adapt. This isn't the first time that he's made an adjustment and moved around from one part of the country to the next. And so I look for the Milwaukee Bucks to do some great things here in the near future.
Sean, one more point I want to make here tonight is that the great Joe Montana from 49er fame has been on NFL Network claiming that the Seattle Seahawks have the capability to be the next dynasty.
You know, when you sent me that and I took a look at that interview, I thought, you know, that's a cool gesture from a Hall of Famer and Joe Montana to say those things. But, you know, at the same time, I wouldn't put too much into it. He says they have the capability. And, you know, they do have the capability of doing it. It's up to Seattle to actually go out there and do it. You know, talking with Bob Stelton just a few minutes ago, as far as the NFC West is concerned, that is a division that is getting stronger. And I believe that the other three teams in that division are putting themselves in position to, you know, make moves. And so even though Seattle is the odds-on favorite to win the NFC West and dare I say the Super Bowl again for another year, a lot of these games that were played in the NFC West were, you're talking about 2-3 point decisions. And so it can go either way. And, you know, Seattle has to go out there and take care of business.
The calendar turns to July tomorrow, which means we are about 3.5 weeks away from training camps across the NFL.
Can't wait. I mean, you know, words cannot begin to describe how I cannot wait for training camp to start and to start anew. And, you know, of course, as we've talked before, the Seattle Seahawks are primed and ready. And past couple of weeks, we've heard some things in their mini camp as far as players chomping at the bit and, you know, almost eating your young, if you will. They, you know, they're chomping at the bit so much to play. And of course, I'm excited for a new season, you know, down here in Northern California, the Oakland Raiders making some changes and some different moves here. And there's a little bit of excitement down here. And I like the under the radar feel that the Oakland Raiders have. But there is a strong confidence that is coming out of Alameda. And so, you know, again, can't wait for August to roll around for that preseason and to, you know, to get the 53-man roster going into September. And it should be a fun ride, Sean Wally.
Absolutely. The NFL is going to be great in 2014 as it is every season. And up here in Seattle, they sold 30,000 tickets for practice. For training camp practices in, I believe it was 40 minutes.
Yeah, you know, the Seahawk fans, the 12th man up there is for real. And, you know, when you have, meaning the Seattle Seahawks have brought a championship, a Super Bowl championship like the Seahawks have done, you know, the fans in return are very grateful for that. And so I'm not surprised that they have 30,000 fans for a mini camp. They're expecting some great things. And so it's just up to Seattle to make sure that they stay away from the injury bugs and make sure that everybody's on the same page. And there's no reason outside of the fact that I'd mentioned before some of those things in the, you know, the things in the NFC West, But there's no reason for the Seahawks not to repeat and go back to the Super Bowl. And so show number 59 in the books, Sean Wally. Sean, you will be going to Las Vegas next week. So you'll be over in Las Vegas doing one half of the Double S Express. I'd like to thank our guest tonight, Mike Gastineau at gasman206.com and Bob Stelton of Cairo 710. Show 59 in the books. We look forward to next week as, again, Sean Wally will be in Las Vegas. You have been listening to the best sports talk. For Don Newsom, our engineer, Sean Wally, Alicia Flores, our producer, I'm Sean Boyd. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double, Double S Express. Join us next Monday for more great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double, Double S Express.
Yeah, you can be the greatest, you can be the best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest.
You can beat the world, you can beat the war. You can talk the guy, go banging on his door.
You can throw your hands.